I'm doing great. Good to hear from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, you've been a regular of the show, I would say, for quite a while, and it's good. I really like the retrospective that you did for the first time you attended EmacsConf. And when was it? Was it 2015? I can't actually remember. Maybe a little later.
2015 was when I presented that, but I did an earlier talk the year before. So yeah, that's why I was kind of thinking, it's like, wow, it's been a decade. It's been a while.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you are in a much better recording situation than you were in 2015 at the back of your colleague's house. It's good to see you at your own place.
Well, it's also nice to pre-record and then just share.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we keep talking about pre-recording. You know, when we really pushed pre-recordings, I think it was 5 years ago when we started, people were not really liking it. They thought, oh, but most conferences are just asking you to come and chat. And, you know, I don't need to do the pesky pre-recording. But now, and especially for you regulars, you're really starting to realize that pre-recordings are actually amazing for everyone. You're less stressed on the day of the conference. We, the organizers, are way less stressed. So it's a win-win scenario for absolutely everyone in the equation.
Okay, so there's
And
some
I really.
confirmation bias at work, but I'm not really arguing with what Leo says for the record. It may be
Yeah.
that we are just that this stoked that we're lying to ourselves by the opportunity that we have to chat with each of you and
Sure, sure, sure,
to
sure.
get at you
But
behind the scenes
I
and
have really appreciated all of the transcripts. It's been great that to be able to read and copy and paste and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it's great. So yeah, let's answer some questions here.
right.
Let's see. Yeah, just feel free to jump onto the Etherpad and just drop on the questions. I'll keep answering them all day, kind of thing, and get better answers as we go along. So yeah, the first question here is, what's my largest code base? I kind of touched it in the in my presentation. However, I think someone just went through and did a better count, and it looks like I've got a little bit more. So so as I joked about in the video, is it large? We've all worked on larger code bases, but that's still, it's kind of significant. So it's not, so yeah, anyway. So let's talk a little bit about searching for functions here. If you've got your functions in your code or code block, well, you can search for the descriptions, as long as you've evaluated it. And so that wasn't so much of a problem, but I did want to like look at the commentary around any function that I would define. And that's where, yeah, the control X or the control F, F to define that function and display it won't pull out the literate stuff around it, obviously. It'll only do the doc header. But if you could search for it and find it quick, then it might be just as useful. And that I guess that's why I started getting into seeing if I can't tie that into the XRef, just the standard ways. My first part, I noticed that Evil has a different way of searching through for looking for code definitions. That was my first foray into it. And it's like, oh, that's not a bad idea. Let's hook it up under, in the standard way. Let's see. Have I ever used org transclusion? No, I haven't, but I think I want to take a look at it. I haven't heard of it before. Let's see. What's my usage of dynamic blocks in my workflows? That's a real good question. I haven't really used them a lot in all of my workflows, but yeah, it's an interesting, we always start, at first, all we're doing is just taking a few notes, then we start organizing, then we've got links, and then we're writing code blocks, and then agendas and table, we keep building up on it. And I guess I haven't really added that to my workflow, but maybe I'll have to come back and report on that. Is the mini buffer being deliberately hidden in my video? Not deliberately. I recorded it first, and accidentally not clipped the video and trimmed that all off. So I went through and started fixing all of it. But yeah, so you'll notice the mini buffer kind of comes and goes in the video. Sorry about that. So yeah, it wasn't intentional at all. What's my take on Emacs org versus Jupyter? That's a real good question. I've been toying about seeing if I could do everything that some people do in Jupyter notebooks in org. I don't need to do it as much because I'm still kind of doing a lot of list programming and a lot of my DevOps, which is a lot of shell work and a lot of Python. Most of the Jupyter notebooks, they kind of automatically include a lot of things in from either Julia or Python, and like NumPy and all the, you know, just all the dynamic stuff that's going on there. And since it has a server, it can kind of, I don't know, it seems like it's running a lot more stuff and then just shipping it back off into the web app. That has been the biggest challenge as I've tried to kind of duplicate that. I don't really know NumPy and all the math stuff and that sort of stuff as that well. So trying to do like matrix multiplications and that kind of thing that seemed to be pretty easy in the Jupyter, it's not very easy in org. I've attempted to kind of work with Julia, and the Julia support for org is really limited, it seems. That's the JU and the Jupyter, the J and the Jupyter. So yeah, there's some improvements we could probably make. So I think if somebody is comfortable with Jupyter and that seems to work, you may have to stay there. I don't know how easy. I would be curious to try to see what we could do as a community to kind of make that transition a lot easier. Do you think any programming language is more suited to literate programming than another? Hey, that's a real good question. A lot of mine is with Emacs Lisp, and obviously that's a first-class citizen in Emacs. Go figure, right? So that one certainly works. A lot depends on the support in the OB version for the Babel work. Python is really well supported. And yeah, Emacs Lisp. Others, shell, you know, it works, but it's hard to get both the values, the variables out of the environment variables into your thing. So most everything is just with the results of output. So, you know, some languages aren't quite as good as others for sure. I would love to see better support for more interesting languages, especially ones that are compiled. I've been dabbling with Rust and like, yeah, what can we do to have Rust more iterative as well? So, do you use inline org function calls in org Babel library? So I used to do a lot of org Babel libraries to kind of share things. Sorry, I'm just kind of thinking through here. I've done a lot of it in the past. There were a lot of bugs in it. 8 years ago when I was playing with it. I bet things have improved a lot more, and it probably saved me a lot more effort. Right now, most of the literate DevOps, the DevOps kind of stuff that I'm doing, is calling a lot of backend programs and that sort of thing. So the org Babel kind of has limited help in that regard. And as far as my Emacs work, well, it's just part of the session, so it's going to be available or not. So that hasn't been as helpful either. So it's kind of dropped off. But I bet if you're using something, you know, like say Python, it might be a lot more helpful. Another question, how do you handle the cases where org markup may sometimes interfere with some of the code in places where you can't escape? Oh, okay. All right. Let me see if I understand the question correctly. When I, like when I'm making prose and I'm talking about a function that I've written somewhere else, like, oh, I need to work on this or this calls this. And yeah, I'll use the tildes or the equal signs on either side to make sure it's clear that it's code. In my XRef, when I'm doing a thing at point so it can go look for that symbol, I do look for those kind of things at the end and strip them off so that I can mark it up and still search and it's still okay. Not sure if that's the answer to the question. Yeah, clarifying. I'm making prose. I'm talking about a function I've written somewhere else. Yeah. That is what I'm talking about, where a function with tildes on either end, and if I do an XRef search find for that symbol, it'll strip that off and then still look for the function name, so I can still mark it correctly. You said at the start that literate didn't catch on in corporate DevOps. Why not? You know, I guess the big thing is not everybody's using Emacs, and I don't think anybody'd be doing literate programming if you didn't have Emacs. I mean, you got to have org, or it just doesn't work that well, right? Why not that full stack on Markdown? Yeah, so I often do a lot of Markdown, and I have got, so I've gone through and make my Markdown look a lot like org. So my headers are the same size as org. When I mark, do the triple back ticks, you know, and specify your language, we can now colorize that. So you can kind of now have it syntactically marked up. It would be interesting if we kind of expanded on Markdown so that I could do a control C twice on it and run that code block. That's a real good idea. Maybe we should work on that. How does your management of to-dos, project and tasks interact with this literate mindset?
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but Howard, I'm going to break right in there because I just can't. I need to talk about that. So this is, I bought a domain.
Gosh, go for it, Corey.
And really what I mean is I have this domain. If somebody gets some work done in this area, I'm fascinated by this. That's mostly really actually my whole comment. But I just wanted to say, indeed, that is something maybe we should work on. Well said. I think the idea of having something that's full stack baked around Emacs is pretty fascinating, just thinking about it as some command line tool that we can run to get some work done, and then there are documents involved. And as you know, coming back to the kind of corporate, you know, sense of some of the things, like that's a little dicey. The same way a free software project raising money for itself is a little dicey. Sure. You know, it might be a necessary way to get through certain kinds of things. And like what the corporate side of the world brings to the table here, in my mind, is that idea of I've got a formal process. Like the process itself is an asset. If I were selling my company, that would be visibly of value to outside auditors that would help us arbitrate the sale. It's just empirical, right? Yeah. And then, you know, tie that together with free software's, you know, kind of maybe a little unstated ethos of doing our work in the open. And you might even deal with some of the ick factor that, you know, that I sort of hand waved around.
Maybe
there.
So, but yeah, the downside to that is you'd still need to use Emacs to run through it, right? You know, for all those cool features, yes, it would be kind of a yet another killer app that we would have.
So my domain name is orgvm. Or orgvm, and my concept is really put org into a box, build a UI around it. It executes things that manipulate files that generate, let's say, web UX. Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's just one conceptual solution, but I really do think this is a super fun topic, and I'm not sure my idea is that wonderful. I personally haven't soaked too many weekends into it, but yeah, I just love the way you're thinking in terms of, well, we should think more about that. Gosh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, because I mean, just like the talk yesterday on the future of org. It's like, let's standardize it, because yeah, we don't want to have org fragmented like Markdown is. Markdown is terribly fragmented. You know, everybody's got different implementations. And yeah, what I've ended up doing, I don't know if you've seen my blog, but I'm always just writing an org and talking to myself and writing questions and answers and essays come out of that. And then I'll put them on my webpage, and it's easy to publish to a webpage. Well, I do the same thing at work, but I need to have it in Markdown. I don't start Markdown though. I'm always starting an org, because that, you know, I can really work through the problem space, you know, of executing code blocks and making sure they work and all of that sort of stuff. And then I just export to Markdown and then go cleaned up a little bit if I need to.
And that makes a lot of sense.
But I am editing Markdown afterwards. So yeah, it would be nice. It would be nice. It's just, it's all done over here as opposed to, you know, adding it over there. But yeah, let's think about it.
Every bit as much as that, you know, I jumped in the spirit of, yes, let's think about it. You know, your yeah. comments about, let's think about the workflows that work for us. Wow, does that hit home, right? So great comment.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So on to-dos and that sort of thing, you know, a lot is the same as it was 10 years ago. At the beginning of every sprint, you know, we at my company, we're using Jira. All jokes are valid when I say that. But I just go to its webpage. I copy all the tasks that I need to do that sprint. I wrote a function that takes that code and reformats it as a bunch of org tasks for me to do that I can just now have all my to-dos. And I start to work off of that from that point on. So it'll reference all the projects, and I do symlinks to every code base that I need to use. Most of the to-dos I put inside my code block is kind of just for me, just because so I can remember it, because the work that I have to do needs to be tracked a little more, you know, more fine-grained, I guess. Yeah. Do I use LP also on larger project, more files and nested directories? Yeah, I haven't really done nested directories, but I can now that I've now kind of realized that I have the feature that I demonstrated, where I can just jump to any projects for a particular project, all the org files and all the headings show up. That works in nested directories. So somebody's typing it in. Yeah, so it's definitely possible. And I have now, since I recorded the talk, I've been busy typing in and trying to extract that out of my init file and make it into a package. I'm looking for a good name right now. I'm calling it Jops, jump to project sections. Anyway, but yeah, that I think that's kind of a nice, useful feature. Have I used Cucumber, Gherkin, and other behavior-driven development? Have I? I mean, I do a lot of more test-driven. I do a lot of unit tests, and I just put it right in my code base, because if it's in my pros, I can just shove it in there. I've got the test right next to the function that I'm testing. I like that, so I can kind of see it. I don't tangle it out to that same source file. I tangle it somewhere else if I tangle it at all, because I don't need to. I can just, you know, control C that and run it. I like that aspect of it. Yeah, just keeping things together. That's the big problem I have with a lot of tests, is the tests are somewhere else. It's separate from the code. I like seeing it all together, but a lot depends on how extensive it is. So for a lot of the, you know, the tests that we end up doing, where, you know, you've got to do a lot of mocks and a lot of startup and tear down, that kind of thing. Yeah, that doesn't help as much. And you probably have to kind of go old school on that. What granularity I'm looking for with my org files and my subcontent? That's a real good question and really subjective. I change that over time. I begin by just dump everything in my head into a file, and then I go through and start to refine it. And then like my goal was at one point was to have an Emacs config file. It was really small and simple, and boy, that just doesn't happen. It's just too fun to add things and try new ideas. And you know, and I found my files were just littered with good ideas that were half baked and not finished. And so it's like, oh, I need to extract these and put them into different files so I can keep it clean. And so I think it's like with any code base, you're just going to keep refactoring. It's an iterative process. So having the ability to, like with an org file where you can archive a subtree, okay, this idea didn't pan out, archive it. I can come back to it later. Being able to just kind of shove it somewhere else is really a nice little feature. All right, not a question, just a comment. Ooh, we need more of your insightful posts and videos. Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yes, it's been a fun journey.
And I think we are coming up on our time, actually. So that is just an amazing quiz. It helps me from manipulating, as I said, or as I put it earlier, like my chance as an organizer, or not manipulating, monopolizing my chance as an organizer to just get a chance to pick your brain on all kinds of things, which is
too kind. Appreciate it. It's been fun. All right, I'll try answering more questions online as well. All right, talk to you later.
And we appreciate your being in the huge resource that you are to the community. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we'll be coming over to our next talk in just a moment here. And so bear with us through the transition as we slip into, I think it's our, is that our penultimate or our ultimate talk? We have one or two left, I'm not sure.
I think we've got a couple talks left. Hi again, sorry, I'm back. Okay, thank you, Howard. And we will be moving to the next talk in about 6 minutes. So if you need to grab some coffee, some tea, use the time wisely. And to confirm, we will have 1, 2, 3 more talks this afternoon. So there's still plenty to go around. See you in a bit, folks.